If you know my name, tell it to me.
Your name is a golden bell hung in my heart. I would break my body to pieces to call you once by your name.
Say it if you know.
Rumpelstiltskin, gotcha.
I should know better than to expect a silly butterfly to know my name.
1, 2, 3, O'Leary.
Butterfly, in all your wanderings, have you seen others like me? Have you seen even one?
A beautiful unicorn sets out to learn if she truly is the last of her kind in this sparkling animated musical. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Extras and Epilogues of the Podzilla 1985 Network. The theaters open once again, and tonight on The Gong Show, which is what I'm going to refer to this month as it features all of Lindsay Wolfgang's friends, we are going to be reviewing...
That's good. I didn't know where you were going with that, and I like it.
Yeah, we're going to be reviewing The Last Unicorn. With me, of course, let me introduce my co-host, Double H himself.
Well, surface never, vault forever. I'm sorry, man. I'm full fallout at this point. Like, knowing the show is out there and I'm not watching it right now is killing me
right
now.
Well, not just that. But think about it. Every episode is up right now and you're not watching it.
The whole thing. Means all day tomorrow I have to actively avoid every Nerdist article that'll be like, here's what that ending of Fallout means for the next season.
Also with us tonight, the lover of anime herself and animation. Hunter's glasses just fogged up for a second because of the heat coming from that cup, and that was actually pretty cool. Yeah,
I can make it happen.
Hey, it's the resident PZ85 princess. It's Lindsay Wolfgang,
and that's my immortality for you. I have once again brought a fellow animation lover from college with me. I present to you the painting ninja herself, Ariel Sakula, will be joining us today. Because she also is a big fan of the show. And
thank you so much for having me.
See, I always thought it was Secula, like Dracula.
I'm sure somebody mispronounces it like that somewhere.
It's Shannon. He's somebody.
It's me. I used to be somebody.
It's you. You're the somebody.
I was a contender. Really quick, before we get to The Last Unicorn, we talk about that. Hunter, we did get to talk about this last night on the show because I was knee-deep in taxes. By the way, tax deadline is April 15th, this Monday. Don't be like the host of Podzilla 1985. Get your taxes in now before the government comes looking for you. By the way, this will be
my
last
show. He did say host, singular. Yes. Might have been done since January.
By the way, this will be my last show as Shannon Young. From now on, I'll be doing the show as...
Guy Incognito?
As Dale Gribble.
Rusty Shackleford.
And what we did get to talk about really quick, Hunter, WrestleMania 40. We're not gonna spend too much time on it, but I do want to mention fantastic show. We'll talk about it more on Thursday.
Yeah.
Why not? But well worth a watch. It was good. Talk about
Friday.
Hey.
Talk about
cinematic brilliance.
Seriously. Literally, it's funny that last year was the Hollywood WrestleMania, or the first one in a long time, because this was the most cinematic one in a long time, other than literal cinematic matches like 2020s. Yes. This was the most movie-like.
You want to know how good this WrestleMania was? Lindsay watched 19.
I cried, and I didn't care.
She cried. Yeah.
Oh, that's not how that works. If you cried, you cared. You just didn't know why.
I was a straight-up man. I didn't cry.
You cried all the time.
I bawled like a
baby. Not lie to the audience.
I bawled like a baby.
You were very happy.
I remember Lindsay crying was we didn't have tickets to the second X-Men movie in college.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, and you had yourself painted blue, so you were just pissed.
Oh.
That's a valid time to cry. Also, can we revisit the blue thing?
Yes. was it?
We were cosplaying to go.
Oh,
and
Mystique.
Was going as Mystique.
Oh. Oh,
I made the mistake. We spent like an hour painting her blue.
So I made the mistake as Mystique. I used acrylic paint, so that was a good time.
Now, would you say the color of your skin was blue or dark?
Shannon.
Blue?
Shannon.
The Shannon? Correct term is ultramarine blue, and it didn't let them out for quite a long time.
Hey, speaking of crying and X-Men, Lindsay also cried today.
No spoilers.
No spoilers.
All I'm going to say, but like, just be prepared if you haven't watched it yet.
I haven't watched any of that series yet, so I'm sitting on that one too.
It's ill.
My YouTuber that I watch that does the breakdowns like three times was like, I'm not okay. I'm not okay.
Hey, speaking of people not being okay, the last unicorn becomes a human, and she's not okay. That's what we're talking about.
Not okay.
Animation April, episode 2. Important note. Now I'll save it for the end of the show. Let's get to the movie here. All right, so Last Unicorn, released on November 19th, 1982. A terrible year. Horrible people were born that year. Directed by Arthur Rankin Jr. and Jules Bast. Of course, Linda, that's Rankin and Bast, right?
Yes, better known for all of the Christmas holiday specials in what they called, it's not Claymation, it's got its own thing, and I'm just completely blanking on what it's called, and I'm hating myself for it right now.
Hunter, can we talk about
Animagic is what they call it.
Animagic.
Yes.
They do call me Shannon
Magical.
And they also did animated versions of Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit.
I thought the art style looked familiar. It reminded me of the Lord of the Rings film, the animated one.
The Hobbit.
Yeah, yeah. Starring Alan Arkin as the most racist magician you've ever seen. Not that he is racist. He, as a character, is racist. We'll get to that. Jeff Bridges, might be the most bored voice actor you'll hear this year.
And he wanted this movie so badly. Did you read that in the notes?
No, I haven't got there
yet. I threw it down under the trivia. So in 2010, Jules Bass said that Jeff Bridges called him out of the blue, volunteered to do this movie for free because the book was one of his favorite books, and then he also recommended his friend Jimmy Webb for the soundtrack. So Jeff Bridges really wanted this movie to get made, and then they got him in the booth, and he was like, all right, here we go. Hey, what are you doing here? What is happening? I'm not going to harp on it yet, but
Mia Farrow did a master class in unicorn acting, and the great Angela Lansbury, who is not in it long, but is always good.
It's wonderful.
Yeah. I didn't put Christopher Lee on here because I do the notes before I watch the movie, for those of you who are tuning in for the first time or whatever. I noticed that Christopher Lee was on the list. He was on the list, but it was like, it was listed as like English and German, and I thought, okay, he's only in a couple of different versions of it. But he's in the one I watched. I hope I watched the right one.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I would absolutely have put him up there over Angela Lansbury. I don't know why she was credited ahead of
him. They're both my favorite part of the film. Her, Angela Lansbury and Christopher Lee, like both of their roles in this film are fabulous.
Christopher Lee is an incredible actor and voice actor. He's a guy who's very good on the mic as well. He narrated a series of Edgar Allan Poe shorts a few years ago, and they were awesome.
I think we watched that, but I think you're really underestimating Alan Arkin as Schmendrick,
who also sounds occasionally either bored or terrified out of his mind. The man has two switches.
Being bored is scary.
On and off.
Runtime of 93 minutes. That's the sweet spot, as we like to call it here on the show. Budget versus box office, $3.5 million budget, $6.5 million box office. That's surprising to me. I thought this would have made more money, considering how beloved it is. I'm seeing this for the first time.
A cult classic. It's a cult classic. Yeah, I did not get a ton of attention at the time. Made a bunch of money in Germany, weirdly. I don't know why it was so big a deal in Germany. Apparently in Germany, it outsold Star Wars. Whichever Star Wars was out at the time. Empire, I guess?
New Hope.
It was a huge deal. New Hope. 77? New Hope was 77, wasn't it?
Yeah. And 80 right, for
but
Empire.
You're right. I didn't think about
that. If I had to wager a guess, and I don't know this, I don't know. Lindsay's the German one. I'm just speaking from, I'm guesstimating. I would say Germans watched the film hoping that Schmendrick would die. I'm not going to say why. I'll leave that up to your mind.
I would say more from the fact that most of the unicorn tapestries and stuff are from that part of the world.
It could be one or the other.
It could be two things. It could be both things.
Well received by critics. 77% critical reception on Rotten Tomatoes. That's 6.6 out of 10. 72% score on Metacritic, which is generally favorable. Todd McCarthy in Variety, and we love Todd McCarthy, said, however vapid the unicorn may appear to the eye, Mia Farrow's voice brings an almost moving, plaintive quality to the character. For an actress to register so strongly on voice alone is a rare accomplishment. And she was really good. She was really good. Mia Farrow was.
Yes.
Now, Mia Farrow, who was she married to? I can't remember.
Do Polanski. You really not?
Roman Polanski.
Woody Allen, wasn't it?
She was married to Woody Allen for a while.
Until she divorced him because he fell in love with his adopted daughter.
That's right. Daughter. I got the wrong name.
Yeah,
yep.
You were
yep.
thinking yep. of Sharon Tate.
Sharon Tate. Sharon Lance. Tate. Yeah, you're right. You're right. It was Woody Allen. Ugh. Yeah. I don't want to say equally bad, but not great in any direction there.
Neither of the situations are ideal. Let's put it that way.
No.
So the base of this film. Well, Lindsay, hell, it's your month. You tell us what the base of the film is. And it's one of your favorite films, so you should tell us.
Yes. So the main point of this story is the unicorn overhears that she's the last unicorn. And she can't fathom that because unicorns don't just vanish and disappear. And so she starts to question if she is actually the last and goes on a journey to find out if it is so.
Yes. And where did she get this information?
From a couple of hunters, but the majority of it she got from a butterfly.
Played by the great Robert Klein. One of my favorite parts.
Who quotes Hamlet at one point in time.
Yeah, I think
he said, I don't remember what it is he said.
Butterflies only speak in plays and songs and poetry and things that they've heard.
Say, he quoted a bunch of things, and I wish I could remember now what it was that bumped me, but Hamlet was the one that caught my attention. He said something, and I went, oh, that's Hamlet. Mm-hmm. And then I realized, oh, I think most of this is Shakespeare, actually.
There's a lot of different stuff. There's some more pop culture type stuff. I'm pretty sure that when he starts singing, I Must Take the A Train is from Funny Girl. And
no, where did he hear that, like, at, Lindsay?
It's pop culture. They were throwing extra stuff in for the parents.
So here's how the movie started. Lindsay put it on, and the first thing I thought was, I really like the animation. I don't know what it is, and Hunter and I
it's
discussed
pretty.
It earlier. I liked it. I liked the style. It felt very fantastical. The hunters come in, the unicorn's there, and I'm like, okay, this I like this setup. And then the butterfly comes on, and about a minute into the butterfly's rantings, I look over at Lindsay and go, what the fuck's going on?
Oh, you say, is he insane? And I'm like, just watch. You'll get it explained in a minute.
Yes, she did. She literally said, just watch. You'll get explained. And at the end, I was like, that didn't explain anything. Like,
if anything, I'm more confused now than I was a minute ago.
Why is he singing
the unicorn stated that it only speaks in song and poetry. So...
Okay, well, I loved it was a good butterfly anyway. Along her adventures, she comes across a base circus troupe kind of thing. It's one of those oddity shows.
Mummy Fortuna's horrors.
Midnight Carnival.
Yes.
No bueno.
Which was, I thought was a great part. I love the idea of using magic to, and I also like the cameo from the lion from the Futurama episode where they taught the lion how to be vegan. That was a good cameo. I didn't expect that. Then there's a harpy who's absolutely real and is also grotesque and unsettling, that harpy. This movie was in 82, right?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Well, let me look something up real quick. Talk amongst yourselves for a second.
About
what? You left this at a weird time.
So Total Recall came out in 1990. This movie came out in 1982. That makes this movie the first movie to feature a female character with three breasts. Important to note.
Because it's the harpy.
Mm-hmm. I wasn't sure where you were going with that. Now I have regrets.
Yeah. Oh,
That's kind of how the show works.
We usually do with some of this stuff.
Yeah. 9 years.
I mean, if we're going to... nonsense. If we're gonna get into it, I'm gonna drop an image into the text so that Shannon can elaborate. He knows exactly what it was. This was a message.
It's
this is a screenshot of a message I sent him at one point in time while I was watching the movie.
Okay. So there's a
part. So when this part came up, Shannon's like, "Why does that tree look like a giant ass?" And I'm like, "Oh wait, it's gonna get better." So this is the most disturbing part of the film.
So what you're telling me is you kept lying to him throughout the movie. They're going to explain that. No, they didn't. It's going to get better. It's going to get worse. It's going to get much worse in a minute.
Great. I'm engaged to a Douglas fir.
Okay. Cap, the tree. the tree just suddenly comes alive.
I'm sorry. Zach Kirk, his friend of the show, just responded in the text, haha, what's that?
Oh dear.
I'm just gonna hit him back with a don't worry about it.
Yes.
Sweetheart.
Tell him don't worry, you'll be seeing plenty of that in your dreams.
There we go.
Yeah, that was
jeez.
And so basically there's this journey of unicorn. They pick up I think her name's Molly Hatchet. They pick her up and take her along on their grand journey too, and they're trying to find where the rest of the unicorns went. And it leads them to Merle Haggard's castle. And
it's not Haggard. It is King Haggard.
His version.
Yeah.
Why not if
it's gonna be Molly Hatchet? It's gotta be Merle Haggard too.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Mine is no more weird and nonsensical than theirs is. And that's the setup. And then at some point along the way, they're confronted by the Red Bull. And actually, so when we watched this movie, in all seriousness, when we watched this, I remember asking Lindsay certain parts, because I do remember this movie as a kid. I have seen this movie before, and there were certain things I did remember. I remembered the Red Bull, because I thought the Red Bull was even though they don't explain what the hell it is or what it does or why it's there, it was a scary villain. Like, that was an intimidating creature. And I remember the skull, the laughing skull, which is probably my favorite part of the film. Other than the
skeleton, yeah.
The skeleton that was just roasting them constantly and asking for wine. That's good. That's basically me on horse time. Just roasting people and begging.
Did you see a little bit of yourself in there?
A little bit of myself in there. A little bit of jealousy.
I remember.
And I'm still waiting. So
that's the problem. He died, but he was still there. He didn't get to go anywhere. It just kept going.
Oh, it just gets worse and worse, doesn't it?
So told you.
That's the setup for the film. I'm going to open up the floor now to discussion on it. I'll start off. This was a very strange film. I did not expect to like it because Lindsay and I have very different tastes. This is more her style, and mine is more of what we're going to watch, I guess, maybe at the
tomorrow.
End of
tomorrow. Or, well, no, it would be for next week's.
What was it, next week?
That's the one it would replace. Yeah.
And I'll tell you what that is at the end of the show. I'm pretty excited about this. But I went into this not expecting to like it, and I did like it. I thought it was really good. It was a good fantasy movie. I liked the characters. Once Lindsay told me that a Jewish person actually wrote the story, you said?
Yeah.
I eased up on my boy Schmendrick a little bit. Just a little. And it was creepy in parts. It was I don't know. What's the right term? It was whimsical. It was whimsical.
It was a good old classic creepy 80s cartoon.
Compared to the other schlock that Lindsay has made me watch when it comes to old cartoons, this is a winner. And it's way better than Space Jam, A New Legacy. So.
You guys subjected yourselves to that.
No, Zach subjected us to that. Lindsay,
that's a Zach Kirkus. That's his fault.
Let's since this is your month, real quick, let's open this up to you and Ariel. Is this movie important to you? Why do you love it so much? Sell the audience.
Well, unlike you, I did see it as a kid, but I don't remember it as a kid. My mom has confirmed to me that yes, I rented this from our like local movie rental place many a times, but I rediscovered it either at the end of middle school or beginning of high school. It's whenever we got digital cable and got Stars and Encore, because it played all the time between the two of those. And I became obsessed again with it because I was in my anime kick. And like, I felt like I had seen it before, but I didn't remember any of it as far as that goes. And it just clicked with me. The soundtrack in it really clicked back to me again, which is all done by America.
What is with the 80s and wanting to put 80s rock stars on the weirdest films?
So, from what I read on stuff, they were looking for someone to do the music, and the director's daughter was obsessed with America and Horse with No Name, and so they looked into having them do it.
It's not quite as weird as Batman when Prince did the whole soundtrack, but...
Yeah, yeah. The soundtrack just clicked with me. I liked the film. I eventually got myself a copy of it, and it just, I don't know, the story in it just resonated with me. I liked the art style in it, and once I got to college, I met other people that liked it as well, including Ariel, and I finally got a copy of the book when I was in college and got to finally sit down and read it, which the really only major differences between the book and the film is when they arrive at Hagrid's castle, they do more of the kingdom surrounding it and like that it's cursed because of him and all this other stuff. And it gives a little bit more of what is going on with Lear afterwards, as opposed to him just being like, yeah, bye, I'm going somewhere else.
Well, I believe Hunter assumed that he was going to travel the world to find and fuck that unicorn.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. I did make that comment to Shannon a couple times. I was like, he's going to do that, isn't he?
And I think they made
this that, is what's going to happen.
I think they made that very clear in the film when he said, "I love who yes. I love," and they were like, "Well, she's going to turn back to you," and he just cuts him off. I love who I love.
Yep.
And then,
it was interesting that there was a banjo in the soundtrack then.
There's a banjo. I don't know. I just like the fantasy aspect of it. I mean, obviously, I've always been one of those girls that like likes horses and unicorns and all that stuff. So it doesn't surprise me that I liked it as a kid. And I definitely watched all the dark, creepy 80s animation as a child. I'm amazed I'm not more messed up than what I am. But this fits into that category completely. So
I've seen your office. You are twisted and creepy. That is a girl that is lost in time, as opposed to
a little bit
with my Ghostbusters. Oh, I can't move that arm. All right, you're Ariel. Broken. What about you? Tell us about your love of this film. I'm fine.
I don't know if you're fine. We'll leave that up to the masses. As far as the movie is concerned, I parallel a lot with what Lindsay's saying. So, and I'm going to add to that. As far as like, yes, I loved horses and unicorns, but like My Little Pony was everything fluffy and like not so scary. I mean, you've watched some of the original episodes of My Little Pony, some pretty scary. But with Last Unicorn, it was, I was traumatized. We've got to back up a little bit for live action. So I was traumatized as a child because my parents both loved fantasy and sci-fi, and I always walked in at the wrong times. Like, it'd be late at night. I was supposed to be already in bed, but like, I walk in on Spaceballs and the aliens bursting out of the chest and I'm losing my mind. Or, I'm sorry, the lizard, right? Yeah. Lizard Alien. No, Alien, yeah. Show tune singing, yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Like, okay, there was another time where I did say, and I don't remember much else about those movies from that era. Like, I went back and loved them later on in life. But, like, same thing with, like, Temple of Doom. Like, I walk in and faces are melting away, and I'm just, yeah. And I'm like, I don't know how old I was, but, like, not even school age yet. And I'm just losing my mind that there's, like, these faces just melting off the television, right? So I learned to like some of the scary stuff, just not as much of the gory stuff. And I feel like Last Unicorn, if you're watching that as a child, is one of the scariest things you're going to see is, you know, the harpy. The harpy is terrifying when you're, you know, 6-7 years old. And then same goes for, like, the Red Bull. Like, that's not something I want to ever encounter. But it was a gateway as a child to get into some of these other movies that was going to, you know, because I wasn't watching Temple of Doom at that point.
But we watched Dark Crystal and Labyrinth and, right. And all that good stuff.
Right. So there's like a subgenre there in the 80s that I think that there's just this cloud of movies that a bunch of us are attached to because it was what we wanted without sending us to, you know, some kind of psychiatrist or something while watching, you know, Temple of Doom or, you know, toddlers or whatnot.
I feel like you and Lindsay both, if you had just had a guiding hand, just twist the knob a little bit, you
would probably like horror as much as you do. Horror.
Yes. I think it wouldn't have taken much to like bring you guys to the dark side. Because a lot of that stuff kind of rolled. The 80s were great for shaping people. You know, maybe
because I think we were both in the same boat of like it would be scary. You'd be behind the couch, but you'd be peeking out around the couch because like that was me with the Neverending Story all the time. Anytime the wolf came on screen, I'm just like, oh, the scary part's coming, but I still want to see it. So
there's the parallels between me. The difference between me and Lindsay is it's the Dark Crystal and stuff like that she's hiding from. Meanwhile, my dad is full on watching Evil Dead 2 in front of me, and the Henrietta's head wrenches up like a skeletal giraffe, and they're chopping it off with a chainsaw. And I was freaked out at first, but eventually I'm just staring at it, much like the unicorn in this movie, dead eyed, just staring at it, not affecting me anymore.
Half-lidded,
yeah,
just.
And my dad would look me in the eyes and say, why is there no life there? Why can't I see my reflection? And I would say, because you're drunk, Dad, go to bed.
To piggyback on the other side of that.
No, please. Let her go first.
But yeah, so to encapsulate everything. So basically it's the dark stuff that we wanted without like being so scary that it would give us nightmares. But it was different from the Saturday morning cartoons that we were growing up on because it had that dark aspect and seeing that, because, you know, spoiler, there is a happy ending in a way, but it's still a dark kind of ending.
Yeah.
So
yeah. Yeah. Like a bittersweet ending.
Yes, that's a good word, Lindsay. I agree.
And I agree with you because I watched cartoons in the 80s, and the big thing about cartoons in the 80s, except for a certain few, is that they were very episodic. They didn't really follow a strict plot line. This was an hour and a half of a plot cartoon. I mean, it was mature. This was, when people talk about like adult cartoons and adult animation, they always bring up, you know, anime and stuff like that. And I disagree. To me, this is adult animation. When you have a mature story with you know, good voice acting, it's not edgelord, it's not over the top. My problem with anime, and I used to love anime, except Hunter, used to love anime. Some of us still love anime. I can't get into it anymore. It's just too ridiculous and over the top. I loved 80s anime, but it was still ridiculous and over the top. I just watched the first Vampire Hunter D the other day, and I was like, oh man, I haven't watched this in forever. And why are you laughing? Is it because I said D and you're thinking of something?
No, did you not see Steven appear and then mute his mic and then disappear? Steven wasn't paying attention to what he joined into, and he got in, and then a second later he muted his mic, and then a second later he left completely.
I hope to God he appears in one of the other rooms. I will drag him back into this to contribute nothing. Point is,
I'm going to set the channel status to get out, Steven. Anyway.
it's a good film. I really love, I think Shemendrick was my favorite part of the movie. I don't know why. I like the magician type, and I thought he was funny. I thought it would be Prince Lear, because I like the noble prince archetype, but nope, he was boring as dishwater.
He's a little washed out, unfortunately.
He fell in love with this girl, and seeing her in like, you know, 10 seconds, this girl who had no personality or history or anything. She just stared out at the ocean nonstop with no personality. He just looked at her and went, that's
but
the
she
one.
Was pretty, Shannon.
That's all that matters in the 80s and now. Thanks, TikTok. I didn't like
yes, him. TikTok is the problem.
Thank God they're getting rid of that soon. Also, his song was by far the worst in the movie. Like, he... I love Jeff Bridges.
Yeah.
Good Lord. That was bad. Where was America?
I feel like this was a hard role for him because he's kind of meant to be that vapid character, I feel. Like, he's not supposed to be, like, Shmendrick's the life of the party, and then, like, the prince shows up and, oh, yes, I'm madly in love with you because, yes, you're beautiful, and that's it. But, like, I think one of the testaments to this movie is that, like, the couple doesn't end up happily ever after. Like, the unicorn goes back to being a unicorn in the woods. Like, this happened, you know, 30, 40 years before Frozen thought this was a good idea with Elsa? Like, this is what they were doing with The Last Unicorn. I think that's way better, props.
So I really thought when Hagrid said that he found Lear, that he wasn't actually his son, that he found him and he thought it would bring him joy, I thought he was a unicorn. I thought he was also turned into a person. Like, I thought that's where it was going to go.
No.
Is that he was going to get turned back into a unicorn at the end, and then him and Horse Elsa would live forever and love each other forever.
Nope, Lear was just abandoned on a doorstep as an orphan, and Hagrid just took him home.
The adoption process back then was crazy.
I mean, he's a king. He can do whatever the hell he wants.
Yeah, you just look around for any baby on a porch, and you go, that's mine now.
So, I have not read the book to this, but I did read the summation of the book and kind of matched it up to the movie. And you mentioned they cut some stuff out. I feel like they cut out too much of his story to make you care about it, to keep us from caring about him, because that was the whole point. Was like, they go through a town and he's the son of this like guy who's like, no, I had to give him up for this prophecy to be fulfilled, and da da da. And he finds out at the end, oh, I'm supposed to be king now. And I don't know. I didn't read it all that deeply, but I read enough of it to make me go, man, I feel like if Jeff Bridges had that motivation,
yeah, he might have probably why he wanted to play the role.
Isn't there also a part at the end where I feel like I almost felt like they cut a part out because they go through the clock. He's there, and they're like, "How'd you know about the clock?" He's like, "Oh, I just walked in here. I just showed up."
He's like, "I saw where she went, and I followed." That's what he did.
That's yeah, convenient.
I'm here. As I told you, there's also a cave on the beach where it turns out you could just go that way.
Yeah, but the clock.
It's been there the whole time.
But the clock was the. Anyway.
Well, you run the risk of like the boat not letting you in going the other way.
Okay, in the
book, I mean, it's an animated fairy tale. It's hard to be right. Like too hard on it.
I had to get over the fact that SpongeBob cooks underwater. I can get over this.
What'd you ask about in the book? What do they explain?
Do they explain what the Red Bull is?
Not that I know.
I don't remember. Ariel, do you remember?
No, and I think the thing is because of the adaptation that they did as a film. It was left up to almost viewer interpretation at that point. Cause they have talked about,
I feel like it was part of the curse, but I don't remember.
I want to say they had talked about the Red Bull was King Haggard's, want or possession for the unicorn. Like that was his,
that's what I thought.
Like a manifestation.
Right. Yeah. So I feel like if you're looking for like the most, I don't know if that's not the right word. Most widely interpreted, yeah. Interpretation is that.
And that makes sense because, you know, especially if he's cursed or if he's magical in any way, that he would manifest this creature to get what he wanted. And it's this fearsome thing that at the end just kind of walks into the ocean.
It's forced into the ocean, and then when it's forced into the ocean, all the unicorns rush back out.
It turns out all it took to defeat it was for one unicorn to stand its ground and go, "No."
And the bull was like, "All right, well, guess I'll die."
I mean, have you ever had to have a child tell you no? Like,
every time a child looks at me and yells at me, I just walk into the ocean, hope for the best.
It feels like the best course of action sometimes, honestly.
Yeah. I also noticed, I asked Lindsay this, and she had never noticed it before, and I don't know if you guys picked up on it too. The crow that was with Mommy Fortuna followed them through the entire film. And
yeah.
There was never a payoff. It just followed them for no reason. I thought it was going to come back. I thought like this was going to tie back to Fortuna. Maybe she was going to be part of the curse or something. No, it's just hanging out. It's just hanging out.
It's like, I like you. I'm going to follow you.
It's like Ethan at the store. It's just there. You know.
I think more than anything, it bothered me. Like, because I did notice that. And I've noticed it before, but rewatching it just now, I'm like, why does nobody ever acknowledge this crow? Like, why don't they just be like, that's the creepy crow that Mommy Fortuna had on her weird log hat going on. Like, why is nobody being like, that crow there, he's dangerous. Like, I don't know.
That's not a good crow. You can tell by his face. That's strange. An evil-looking crow.
Correct.
From what I understand is, at least the thing I read was, it was supposed to be part of the happy ending that she goes back to the forest and this crow goes with her and they become friends. And I'm like, well, it didn't show any of that in the film other than at the end they went to the forest. Like, I feel like your what is it called? Fan writing, fan fiction.
Fan fiction?
Yeah, fan fiction.
Whatever.
I don't think that's it.
You ship the crow and the unicorn together.
Please no.
Also in this
Lear's going to have some words with you.
Yeah, but they're going to be really monotone, and I'm not going to listen.
Hey, back off, man.
Don't put that crow with my unicorn bride. All right, now is the part of the show where we review the film.
Oh, hang on.
Well, I figured you'd
hang on. Review,
but go ahead.
That's fine. Yeah. That's fine. No, it's fine. It's fine. I'll do it then.
Yeah. So, Ariel, how we do this, I think you listened to the point, which is still, to me, the strangest film we've ever reviewed. I still don't know how to feel about that movie. Haley was a dynamo explaining that film, and I'm just sitting there taking notes going, you know what bothered me about that the more I thought about it? Not to harp on the point real quick, but when you said that the dad character was voiced by different actors, and I picked the Alan Thicke version, you can tell that Alan Thicke, I don't think he was obviously recording his lines with that kid because it's like two people talking at the wall and then you just mix them together.
They're like talking at each other.
Yeah. Yeah, they're not together.
Yeah, no,
at
that's
all.
The narrator is the only part they re-recorded.
Bothers me on that is all. All right, so the way we do it here on the show on Extras and Epilogues, we take after the greats before us. Two thumbs up means you love it. One thumb up means you liked it. One up, one down means you were neutral on it. One down, you didn't like it. Two down, you hated it. Hunter, now three films are in the two thumbs down club on the show across the board. And that is Dog Soldiers, Pending Review.
Correct.
We might revisit that
one. You keep saying that, but I don't know. I
after the dreck we've watched on this show,
I give it another shot. But I feel like that's an unfair way of doing it, man. You watched the movie. It was bad. That's like, I don't think it's fair to then go, well, we saw other things and it's not that bad. Not a sliding scale. If it was bad, it was bad.
Fateful Findings, which will always be bad. There's never.
Yes. That one's not. Yes.
Ariel, have
not
you heard
necessarily
of Neil
not entertaining. But...
Ariel, have I discussed you about our Lord and Savior, Neil Breen, the three Breen salad?
I've heard the discussions on Neil Breen. Not a lot of them, but. But I'm well enough aware. You need to go into that again. It's cool.
That's a polite way of telling you to stop talking about the Supreme Breening.
It's the polite way of saying F off, clown.
And Space Jam A New Legacy is the third one.
Which is by far my most hated film. Like, it's the one that made me the angriest on the show so far. It technically wasn't the worst. That would absolutely be Fateful Findings. But it's the one that made me the angriest. It's my least favorite.
It drove you to drink.
Yeah, that's what did it that day.
I still haven't re-listened to that episode yet.
No, I have to thank you for ranting about Neil Breen because it gave me time to confirm something on IMDb. So to circle back to the point, so more things in common. So Paul Frees, who literally voices everyone and everything, did a version where he did Oblio's dad slash the pointed man's right head slash king slash leaf man, etc. Was also in Last Unicorn because, of course, he is.
I think he was the cat.
He was the cat, and I believe the skull. That's the other thing I was trying.
I love when it. I love when his face got flush, and I went, "How?"
Like, that's wine.
Also, can we talk? We're skipping ahead to the ending here, but this was a thought I had, and I forgot to voice it to Lindsay. When the castle crumbled, a la Castlevania, did anyone check on the poor pirate cat? Did he get out okay?
He's a cat. No. He got out of there.
Yeah.
They're resourceful.
And you mean the exposition cat? He's got to go tell somebody else what's going on in the story at that part.
Well, Hunter, he is who he is.
He's got to get
tell it to them straight.
Yeah, I love when you that. Love when they call him out and they're like, why don't you just tell us? He's like, I am what I am. I'm a cat. Sorry.
It's just Charlie as a cat. Well, I mean, I am what I am.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but maybe try to be somebody else. Anyway. All right.
I misspoke. Paul Frees was Mabrook the magician that was in the castle. That,
okay, it was Mabrook.
Gotcha. Yeah, looked very oddly like the Lord of the Rings wood elves, but that's beside the point.
The one that literally just appeared and was like, you can't do this to me. Saw the unicorn and went, oh, all right, later. I just bounced.
He's legit vanished. Yes.
Never to be seen again. All right. I'll go first, as I always do. I'm gonna give this one thumbs up. I liked this film. I did. I thought it was an entertaining film. I liked the animation. I liked the characters. I actually did care about the characters in the movie, especially the unicorn. I thought Mia Farrow did a great job, and I love the design of the unicorn. I love the design of her as a human. When she turned human, she still looked very not ethereal, but very whimsical. I mean, she looked like a fantasy character, even in human form. Like, you could tell there was something off about her. Like, everybody knew she was a unicorn, but she even had a look of, man, like, she's human, but something's not quite right here. And I thought they did a great job on that. Alan Arkin as Schmendrick was fantastic. He entertained me. I was going to say he made me laugh, but I don't think he did. The butterfly made me laugh. Robert Klein made me laugh. That was entertaining. It's just a good overall film. I think if you want to introduce your children, or, you know, in our case, your pets, your cats, dogs, to a good 80s animation, and you don't want to show them, you know, anime or the gummy bears or anything like that, this is a good choice. Sorry, Lindsay, not dissing the gummy bears.
The gummy bears are good. Do not diss the gummy bears.
I'm not dissing them.
They still hold up.
Okay, I'm not dissing the gummy bears. I don't even remember what they are.
They're gummy bears.
But I liked it. I thought it was good. I have no complaints about it. If anything, my only complaint is there's just a little bit that I felt got left out that they could have expanded on. Maybe explaining a little bit more about who the Red Bull is. Explaining more about why Hagrid is so him and why he is the way he is. There's just a couple things they could have touched on more. But overall, good look, good music for the time. It's not my style. America is not on my playlist. I don't dislike them. but I'm not jamming them on the way to work either. But I liked it overall. I thought it was good. Hunter, what about you?
Well, I'm glad you left off on the only thing I did like about it, because I didn't care for this movie at all. I'm going to break a couple of hearts here. I'm sorry. I just didn't.
Think we're all jaded. That's why we do this. Yeah. Not everyone has to agree.
We did the same thing to me.
I'm from London. Don't worry. It's true. I think I'm a little younger. I know I'm a little younger than some of you guys. So I was born in 85. So this was a little before my time, and I didn't see this at all. But I saw stuff like it, or at least I remember seeing stuff like it, and boy, did I hate it then, too. You were talking about like that sort of like kind of a little bit off kind of creepy animation style. That's exactly what it did to me then. And so watching it now gave me those exact same feelings of like, this is uncomfortable the entire time that I was watching it. Is it well done?
Sarah had seen it before.
Sarah has not seen it. When I asked her if she wanted to watch it, she said no because she had heard that it was sad. And I watched it and I went, well, I wouldn't call it sad, but I also wouldn't think, I don't think you missed anything.
Fair enough.
Sad was Prince Lear when he realized he wasn't going to tap that unicorn.
Well, him and Chibi Usagi can go have a support group of people that love horses.
Oh, and John Oliver. Add them to it. yeah, I don't know, man. I'm trying to be as objective as I can. It's not that I thought it was like, it's definitely not the worst thing I've ever seen by any stretch of the imagination. I would not even consider giving it 2 thumbs down because it's not that bad. First of all, I like I said, you left off on the thing I liked the most. I thought America did a great job on the soundtrack. I thought the score was pretty good too. I did not care a single thing about the original songs for it. I'll be totally honest with you. That did nothing for me. Anytime the characters were singing, I was like, okay, I'm good. Not interested. But the America songs were good. And
The Last Unicorn, no. Man's Road, and In the Sea are the best music pieces in it.
I thought the score was really good. For as much as I didn't care about what was going on when they did the big fight, quote unquote, at the end with the unicorn and the Red Bull.
The music in it was
there's an intense orchestral thing there that I really enjoyed. Like, it really got me. But yeah, I don't know. You guys know me. I'm big on theming and big on stories here. And at the end of this, I could not tell what I was supposed to take away from the story. What was I supposed to, the only thing I can think of, because they kept talking about, well, now she's the one, she's a unique unicorn because she understands regret and loss. And I was like, all I can think of is that tweet where it's like God going, look, I've made a human. And they go, no, you haven't. You just gave a monkey anxiety. That's what you've done. Look, you fucked him up.
Well, Hunter,
you ruined him.
Did you realize at the end she was still the last unicorn of her kind?
I guess. And I don't know. I watched a lot of this movie going, okay, I see where it's going and what we're doing and that things are progressing and happening. But again, at the end, I went, well, what was I supposed to take away from that? Because she had so little agency throughout all the movie. And then she had all the agency. And then at the end, it was like, all right, well, at least now I know. Deuces, I'm gone. I don't know. It just didn't do anything for me. I laughed a lot at the voice work, so I'm much more of a voice person than I am an animation person. You guys know that about me. Alan Arkin was bad. I'm sorry. Alan Arkin was not nearly as good as I wanted him to be. There were times where I thought like what he was doing could have been funny, but it was also dubbed is not the right word, but it was added in such a weird way that I went, hey, you're stepping all over this joke, and I can't hear it. I can't pick it up. It's not fitting in right. Also, this was what bothered me so much about the animation. So many times it didn't match up to what was being said. I'm gonna drop another screenshot. This is what I like to call Exhibit B into the text. I sent this to Shannon as well. He's desperately screaming for her to run for her life, and this is what his face looks like.
I think part of that is also it being animated in Japan, as far as that goes. So I don't know how much audio they already had on things. Because there are several times that the mouths don't sync up at all.
Very rare in there. It felt like to me.
Character is, you know, frantic. Not character is disinterested.
Right. We've already talked about it with Jeff Bridges. Jeff Bridges is legitimately one of my favorite actors, but boy, he's a terrible voice actor. I don't think I'd ever known him to voice anything, and this is the first time I can recall this, and he just, again, for a guy who supposedly wanted this movie made so badly, he sounds bored out of his mind throughout it. Christopher Lee is incredible, so that was a nice bonus. And again, Mia Farrow does a really good job with what she has, but I just... man, I don't know. It just never quite resonated with me in a way that there were several times that I went, I'm never going to watch this again. Like this is a one and done. I'm getting through it because I want to do it for the show. I've never not watched a movie for the show, but it just didn't do anything. I know. You've broken my heart a few times. It just didn't do anything for me specifically. I was a little bothered by the, once they got to the castle, Amalthea just spends so much time just staring out at the sea.
Staring at that damn sea.
I just, and again, the dead-eyed unicorn goes to dead-eyed human.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
There's a lot that gets lost in translation in that part from the book. They go more in-depth on a lot of stuff there.
This is the thing that I think bothers me so much. I feel like probably this is being saved from being worse for me because I haven't read the book. Because if I had, I feel like I'd be even more disappointed. I put a note in there, another trivia note that Christopher Lee literally would show to the recording sessions with the book, saying like, "We're not cutting this out. We're not cutting this out." He did the same thing on Lord of the Rings, and that's why he's great. But I feel like, man, I wish he'd been present for even more things because surely he wasn't there the whole time. There's no way. Because again, knowing now what I know about the book, there's just stuff that should have been there. I don't know. I just don't know. It's not for me. And again, I try to be as objective as I can, but I also I don't know who to recommend this to. I actually said to Shannon at one point in time, who is this for? It's got to only be at this point for people who saw it when it was around that time. I mean, you said a minute ago, like, oh, if you wanted to introduce, you know, your kids or people to animation from that era, this is not what I would go for. This is not the one that I would prop up as an example. I'm certain there are others. I can't think of any off the top of my head, but this is not the one.
I don't think there are any others like this, though. Like, for that time period especially, of a story that is, again, whimsical in nature, that isn't Lord of the Rings, that isn't, is a different kind of story, that I don't know, man. I don't know much about anime from the 80s, though, so I'm just completely blowing smoke here. My personal experiences. But I get what you're saying. I don't disagree with a lot of your points. The voice acting was very... Christopher Lee was fantastic. He always is. I like Schmendrick, yep. But I think it was because his name was Schmendrick and he talked with that, you know, he had that chutzpah. I don't know. I just...
Part of Schmendrick also is that he is a Schmendrick. He's supposed to be the bumbling oaf that can't do anything right. And I don't know if he was trying to play on that or not.
Well, except for the parts
but there are times, yeah.
Except for the parts where he's incredibly powerful. When he's like, I can't do magic.
Yes.
Well, we need to do magic. Then does the biggest magic ever.
But he doesn't really do anything. It's the magic that does it on its own. He's got no control over it.
But he's still doing
that. Well, then anyone could do that.
Right.
The way you're spinning it makes it sound like anyone could do that.
The force.
So then to your point, though, Hunter, you're saying that... You know, okay, so then he says, you know, magic's happening on its own, but you're saying that, like, who is this for? It might be for the people that don't have the confidence in themselves, but then, shoot, they realize, like, yes, anybody can do this as long as you have the intention behind it. So I would argue that this film is for anyone who maybe doesn't want the sunshine, lollipops, and rainbows of all of the, you know, typical happily ever after films. They want something that is a little more in-depth like that.
They did the same thing in episode, what, 8? Where anybody could do it, and this is for everybody, and then by 9, they wrecked.
Oh, Star Wars.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. No, I will say, and I was getting to that, I will say I did like that it didn't end on just a completely happily ever after note. I think that's good. I think, again, I would have liked a stronger look at that theme, because I think that is a good theme of for everyone who thinks that they're not good enough, they're not capable enough. You know, if you try hard, you believe in yourself, and you surround yourself with people who believe in you too, then you can do these things. But I never really got that. I never really got that was what they were going for. And I get it; it's a kids' movie. It's not always going to be quite that evolved as a theme. But at the same time, it's a kids' movie. You kind of got to beat them over the head with it to a certain degree. And I don't know that I don't know that they're getting that. So I like that the ending was not super upbeat, but I would have liked that thematic tie-in to be stronger. I think that's what I wanted.
I mean, my favorite quote from this entire film is when Schmendrix goes, "There's no happy endings because nothing ends." That's one of the biggest things I take from this film in the long run.
So you unlocked something that I was thinking about earlier. One of the frustrations I have with it, with Schmendrix especially, is his whole magic thing. I want to be the best magician. Constantly shows he can do magic, And then at the end, like, yes, they've shown that he can do magic, but he was kind of doing magic the whole time. And at the end, the unicorn just says, well, now you're a great and powerful magician. Like, they tell you that, but they don't really show it to you. Because even by the end of it, he wasn't really controlling the magic still. It was still just happening. And they're like, oh, well, now you're a powerful magician. How does it feel? And he's like, eh, it's what I always wanted. You know, and
I think felt off. I think one of the things, too, is he's always showing surprise when magic starts happening. He's like, oh, I just did magic. Like, surprise! Yeah. Like, you know what I mean? Like, he's trying to, and then it actually happens. He's like, oh, shit, I did that. Sorry, are we allowed to swear on this podcast?
You're
good.
All the time.
Yeah, don't worry about that.
I was gonna talk about something for the ending, but we actually have to talk about the ending afterwards. So, Hunter, where does that leave you? And I'll move on to Lindsay.
No, man.
Okay. I've been toying with this for the entire show. I've been desperately trying to decide where I want to go. I don't feel right going one down, because personally, if it was purely subjective and just what I thought about it, it'd be one down. It didn't do a thing for me. I don't think it's the worst thing I've ever seen, but I have no interest in watching it again. That said, it's obviously got some, at the very least, some historical merit, and I don't know. There are some good things and there are some bad things. It's about as simple as I can put it. So I'm going to go a one up, one down. This is exactly where I was with the point, and I'm going to do it with this one too. I get why it's important to people. It just isn't there for me. That's as fair and objective, I think, as I can be, is to go right down the middle on it.
See, this is why we pride ourselves on being good reviewers, because we've had this moment a couple times, both of us, famously with Tokyo Gore Police. Personally, Hunter hated the film. But I presented an argument of the significance that he went one down instead of two down, because there is a point to being a objective reviewer and not a subjective reviewer. And that's what we strive to be here. All right, Ariel, you're up. What's your rating and why?
Oh, dear. So child me would have been, child me would be like, oh, goodness, absolutely two thumbs up, because it was a staple of my childhood. I think Lindsay and I experienced a similar thing where it was out of print on like VHS or something for several years.
And then we both had like recorded off TV copies for the longest time. So, and I'm pretty sure when I got the DVD, I gave you my VHS.
That sounds about right.
How sweet. Here's an inferior product. Enjoy.
So look, if you understood, Ariel, there is always a working VCR somewhere. So
that's valid. So I'm actually going to also throw in another piece of trivia, though, that I found out. So there's actually alternate versions to this movie. So I didn't realize I have the G version on DVD. I don't know what my VHS is. I'd have to go back and look at that. But if you go on to, there's a PG-13 version where basically they put in all the original swearing, or rather that's the original adaptation of the movie, is they had a... it wasn't a lot of swearing, but it was like, damn this and damn that. And then they also had, there was like that moment where Amalthea turns human. And it's like that brief moment of female nudity that like you don't even really catch because it's so like vague. But they apparently have a little bit more of that in the PG-13 version. So I'm not so sure it was for kids the first time around. And I don't know what version I watched as a child.
You do not want to see the R-rated one, trust me.
Oh, I'm sorry. Bad, you have that on VHS somewhere.
But there are different edits and adaptations.
Yeah, sure. And I didn't realize that. So I don't remember what I watched when I was younger. I'd imagine it would be the original, because they said that the G version was released in 2007 on DVD. I have no idea what happened in between that span. Thinking about it objectively, I'd probably have to give it a one thumbs up. I really still enjoy the animation. I think the animation is beautifully done. I would argue that, the voice acting doesn't always line up, and I do agree that, yes, most of it's animated in Japan and overseas, so they probably didn't have all of the context that they needed for that. The songs do not hold up. Prince Lear. I went and watched that again. I was like, no.
It's
like,
real bad.
So there's like
either of the character songs, I'm just like, oh, this hurts. This hurts a lot.
So yeah, it's, you know, the animation's there for me. I feel like the score is beautiful. America did a great job, like you said. I would agree with all those things. I think objectively, I would still give it a one thumbs up. If people are interested in watching traditional animation that is not all of the mainstream Disney that they grew up on, that this is a good gateway to some of those other studios that had some of those more experimental, wow, words are hard, experimental animation going on.
All right. All right, Lindsay, well, that leaves it up to you. I'm wondering.
I am also being objective. Now, I'm sure if our longtime listeners remember, The Last Unicorn is in my top five favorite movies of all time. Both Hunter and Shannon thought that I was going to pick this movie for Nostalgia November last year, but I threw them a curveball. And then originally we were going to do this for my birthday, but stuff happened, so we're doing it now. I love this film 100%. I show this film to all kinds of people. Like this, I just love this movie. I love the characters. I love the soundtrack. I loved it enough that I tracked down the book and have a copy of it now. I still need to get its sequel and the new short stories that have recently been released. And again, yes, child me would give this two thumbs up in a heartbeat as far as that goes. But objectively, it is one thumb up. Because it does have its own problems as far as that goes. I agree entirely. I love the art direction. I love that they took the inspiration from the unicorn tapestries within all of the background art and different styles that way. As someone that grew up loving all the Rankin-Bass holiday specials, I love that it has the same art style as 'Twas the Night Before Christmas. If you compare the characters in both of those, their human characters all have very similar exaggerated characteristics and things that way. Like, especially very few, even their characters that are supposed to be attractive and pretty still have exaggerations to them as far as that goes. I have some of my favorite memories from this film, like watching it over and over in high school. I remember specifically one time sitting in the living room watching it when Schmendrick's going through his like rant of, I am blah, blah, blah. I'm great. I'm wonderful. I did this. And Molly just yells at him, you are an idiot. And my mom just walking down the hall going, you tell him. But it's just, I love the film. I can quote tons of it. And all the different voices in it are great. I love Angela Lansbury, Christopher Lee. Like, that's just good. I love it. But in the long run, I am sticking with one thumb up.
All right, Lindsay, I didn't mean to cut you there. Fun fact, though, that was Angela Lansbury's debut voice acting in this movie.
Yes.
Along with Renee, I cannot pronounce his last name, but Aubergenois, maybe?
I'm guessing he was
the skull.
Oh, the skull, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, he was so good. That was my favorite part.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, Hunter, while we're talking about this, hearing us talk about this film and hearing them talk about the film, a scary thought hit me. A chill went up my spine and the hairs on my arms just stood up because I thought somewhere in reviewer land, there's a group of people talking about Tombstone and someone's giving it a thumb down going, this just wasn't for me. And that scares me. Like, that scares me.
But it's so good.
Tombstone is objectively one of the best films of all time, and there's someone out there that doesn't like it. And I don't like that.
Where do you sit on Tombstone?
Yes, Ariel. Where do you
You've never
on
watched it, have you?
I can't tell you the last time I watched it, so I can't weigh in right now.
At least you can admit you've seen it, though.
I have.
It's never too late.
In fairness, you said it's just objectively a great film, and that's just not how objectivity works, unfortunately.
Well, this one it is. This one it goes.
I'm so glad you called him out on it. I wasn't going to do it.
No, there are certain things that are objectively true. The sun will rise tomorrow. Tombstone's an amazing film.
You don't know that. You don't know that.
That's Snoop just messing with that magic.
It's not how that works. No, I think we're all looking at this from an objective standpoint, which is what we're trying to do. That's what we're always trying to do on this show. It's just that we have different opinions of what that level of objectivity is, and that's fine.
On experiences, personal experiences, that does influence.
Right. That's always going to be a level of that. We're human beings. There's literally no other way of going about these kind of things.
Right.
So,
all right. Well, yeah. Hey, let's get to the ending real quick, and then we'll talk about what happens after the credits. So, Schmendrick turns
Amalthea.
Schmendrick turns Amalthea back into the unicorn, but she's unwilling to leave Lear's side. She's fallen madly in love with him because he exists. That's the only reason I could figure it out. It's that 80s love where pretty people fall in love with no substance. He is man and he is prince, therefore I love him. The bull begins driving her toward the ocean just as he had driven the other unicorns. Lear tries defending her but is killed by the bull. That's my Hunter mentioned this to me earlier. When
Exhibit C coming up, give me a second.
when they're like, Schmendrick, stop him. Magician can't do that. Only a hero can do that. And he goes, I'm on it. And then the next scene, he's dead. He's just dead.
The timing kind of went over it. Anyway, I'll drop it in there regardless. I think the version that I wrote to you, Ken, the time is over the top of it where it says, no magic in the world can save Rennell. That's what heroes are for. The hero immediately dies.
His whole seconds later, he just stood in front of it. That was it. You had a sword once upon a time. Where'd that go? Use the sword, man. Anyway, enraged, the unicorn turns on the bull and forces him into the sea. How did she do it? She just did.
Shook that horn. In the general direction.
And the bull said, oh no, my one weakness. As the beast is engulfed by the water, the missing hundreds of unicorns emerge from the raging sea, carried on the incoming tides. With their release, Merle Haggard's castle collapses into the sea, and Haggard and Tanner Calvert watch off from the battlements and falls to their deaths. On the beach, the unicorn magically revives Lear before she leaves him, because unicorns can do that. Schmendrick assures Lear he gained much by winning the love of a unicorn, even if he is now alone. That's the best thing to tell somebody when they get their heart broken is, look, I know you got your heart broke, but you had the experience.
But you felt something
briefly, right? The unicorn later says goodbye to Schmendrick, who laments he wronged her by burdening her with regret and taint of mortality, which would make her unable to properly rejoin her kind. She disagrees about the importance of his actions, as they had helped restore unicorns to the world and made her experience regret and love. Schmendrick and Molly watch the unicorn depart for the forest. I actually really like the ending. That was one of my favorite parts. It ends on a somber but hopeful note, and Ariel talked about it earlier, where it's not like in Hunter 2, where it's not the fluffy normal ending, where somehow in any other story, the prince would have married her. She would have stayed human and married him, or when he died, he would have been reborn as a unicorn, and there was some way they would have lived happily ever after. And this story stuck to its guns and said, no, that's not how the story is. She is a unicorn. He is human. And the ending with Schmendrick and the unicorn itself, the way they talk to each other and the regret, I felt that emotion. I really did. It was sad. And the fact that it wasn't just a clean, hey, everyone's safe, we did a good job. It was very much, I'm sorry for what I did to you. There was something about that. That was really good to me. That spoke to me.
It was a good rhyme from earlier in it where she's explaining to him that, like, I don't feel regret. I can feel sorrow, but it's not the same thing. And then at the end, her going, I regret, like, understanding that difference.
Yeah. And so we come to epilogues where we talk about what happens to these characters after the story.
Now, hey, sorry, real quick. What did she regret?
Not being able to be with the prince.
Falling in love with a guy she knew nothing about just because the story dictated it.
That's the
one. Or hurting other people, like hurting him.
That is probably the regret.
Did she? No.
Was she broke his heart?
I don't understand how she hurt him.
Well, she was cold to him.
By not saying something that she wasn't?
Yeah.
True.
All women should change for their men.
Again, this is where I have problems with the theming of the story.
It's devolved really quickly.
Yes. Uh-huh. Let's get past it. Let's get exactly. into epilogues.
If you put everything under a microscope, just move past it.
The book was written by a man, so...
Which is surprising that the unicorn wasn't sexier. Anyway.
Tell that to Lear.
So... normally on the show, what we do with is I will pitch like a sequel, and Hunter will talk about the characters, or vice versa. We take turns. On this one, I don't know. I'm gonna leave it up to Lindsay and Ariel. I'd like to hear their thoughts and Hunter as well. I will just take the joke. No, I'm not finished. What I think this is important that I say this. What I think that happens to the characters is Lear and it's the sequel. It's Lear's quest to find that unicorn. And fuck it.
There it is. I knew he couldn't resist. I thought you just let it hit. Just let it, like,
I thought he was honestly just going to leave it and then let Lindsay pick it up. But no, he had to, he took it right over
took it right over the cliff and into the sea with where all the rest of the unicorns were.
I mean, technically it has a sequel, but I've never read it, so I don't know where it goes.
So it's just a book
called Two Hearts. Yes, there's a book called Two Hearts that is the sequel.
It also created a whole new genre of adult entertainment called uniporn. And I'm not a fan of that.
Please stop. Please stop.
Let's go to you. I'm done. I've used all my best.
Oh, don't go to me. No, don't go to me. Go to them first.
All right, Lindsay, follow up with uniporn.
Well, I was going to follow up with, I was going to take this opportunity to rant of how they teased me with a live action version of this way back when I was in college. And it has still never happened. And personal, because it was basically in production hell. When it was in production hell, this was Christopher Lee's baby. He wanted to come back on board and play Haggard in live action. And Angela Lansbury was on board. She was all for being Mummy Fortuna. And me personally, now that both of them are gone, I kind of don't care anymore. Like, it has literally been more than 20 years since this was thought out.
Okay. So,
and I think the only thing, I was talking to Ariel earlier, the only part of it that I might be back on board would be if, like, Jeff Bridges came back and instead he played Haggard, and maybe Mia Farrow's came back to be Mummy Fortuna or something that way. But they teased us so many times and nothing got passed.
I'm being earnest here. I'm not making a joke. Hunter and I suffered through a similar thing with Ghostbusters. They wanted to make Ghostbusters and wanted to make it, and usually it was Bill Murray passing on it until Harold Ramis passed away. And Harold Ramis is a personal hero of mine and my favorite Ghostbuster, and I at that point didn't care. When they brought out the 2016 version, I think part of the reason I was more accepting of it than some people, not Hunter, but just
because
in general,
it was different.
I wasn't looking for the original Ghostbusters because it could never happen because Harold Ramis had passed. So I was fine with the new generation. But maybe you will get lucky, like we did with Afterlife, that they will create something from The Last Unicorn that lives up to the legacy and will make you smile. And you deserve that.
Because great.
So many of the things that you have told me over the years of, oh, they're making a movie of this, Macross.
Robotech hasn't happened.
Live action.
All the fandoms that I love, they're just like, oh, you like this? Fuck you. So
at this point, it's almost like a personal grudge.
But I just, it made me so happy learning that, like, this project was, like, a pet project of Christopher Lee's, that he really wanted to play this role, that he had that much of an attachment to this character, that I would have loved to have seen him playing, especially watching him be Count Dooku. Like, taking that, but switching it over into a Hagrid character would be awesome.
He was age appropriate.
And we will never see any of it as far as that goes. And I don't want to see some stupid CG AI recreation of it. I don't want to see that.
What if Algae Rhythm took care of it?
No.
All right, let's go to Ariel.
What if they played basketball?
I'm very glad that you brought this up, actually, so I did have things to add on to that. So first off, let's talk about Peter S. Beagle is 84 years old. He's going to be 85 on April 20th. Happy early birthday to him. All right. He fought really hard to get the rights back on,
because he didn't like the adaptation that was happening.
Right. So things were not going in a direction that he wanted. So he was stalling because he wanted to gain the rights back to his own intellectual property, mind you.
Yeah.
And he got in a really nasty lawsuit with his manager. I did write his name down because I forgot what it is. Connor Cochran. Gosh, doesn't that sound like a villain name? And he, like, legit. So he got in he sued his manager because the manager gained financial control of a lot of things, and actually he sued him for financial elder abuse. So all that going down was, like, dashing all the hopes of us fans going live action. 84 years old, is this man even thinking about trying to do a live action, or is he just happy to keep writing his books?
More or less unicorn content. I'm going to be hunting down those two short stories that he just recently wrote. So,
yeah, exactly. And the one, Two Hearts, I didn't even realize until today that there was a thing. But Two Hearts is the the ending, the coda, they call it, to The Last Unicorn. That was actually written in 2004, and I'd never seen or heard of it until now, but I think I was so wrapped up in one thing.
I had heard of it, but I never actively, like, hunted for it, which is sad, because that's when we were freaking graduating college.
This is one of those rare cases, which we do encounter on the show occasionally, where the epilogue has already been written by somebody. You know, that the story has already continued. Mm-hmm. Well, we run into that a couple times. So, yeah, I guess the best epilogue would be just to go read the actual
buy the book.
Go read the author's actual book.
I intend to. I really want a copy of it. It's just,
Lindsay, let me save you some trouble. You can get it for less than $20 on Amazon right now. I just dropped
it. That's what I figured. I'm going to pick it up. I got stuff.
So it is.
He added it to his cart.
It is, it's two, yeah, we'll talk about why here in a minute. It's two novellas, apparently, is what it is. So there's two stories. The book is called The Way Home, but it's that Two Hearts, and then it's something else called Sue's. And I sat here and read the summary.
So it has the Two Hearts and then the follow-up. Okay, sweet. So I just need to get The Way Home then, and it's got both. Sweet.
It covers the whole thing, yeah.
Even better, because it just came out in paperback this past month.
So I read through a little bit of the summary here. I'm assuming you don't want to know about it because you haven't read the book.
I mean, I read the synopsis way back when, so it doesn't matter to me.
So
in all
here's the only this will be, because Shannon was going to throw it to me earlier. I'll take this. I didn't have like you said, sometimes we have kind of a creation for it, but this already has kind of its own thing. And it has been sometimes I wasn't invested enough to really come up with like a new story to follow it up. These stories seem to follow a couple of new characters. The way they're phrased is that they're taking place in like the universe of this original story. Yeah. So some of those characters are there, some of them are not. But here's what kind of bothers me. Toward the end of one of them, the unicorn hasn't been around for like the whole thing. And when they're dealing with this like griffin and they think that like all hope is lost, Schmendrick just calls Amalthea back into play. She kills the thing quickly. Lear, who is king, dies from his wounds from fighting it. Although they get to reunite and then he dies. And then the unicorn brings another character back from the dead again, like she did Lear way back in the day, who dies in that fight, but leaves Lear dead. And then it says she vanishes without a trace. And I'm like, what kind of shit is that?
Maybe
they want to open that can of worms.
Maybe unicorns only have a one re-res policy.
Everybody gets
one.
It's just
one a day.
Spider-Man bit. Yeah. That's what it is. It's the Spider-Man bit from Family Guy, where everybody after she one. Brings you back, he's like, everybody gets one. She takes off.
Yeah, she vanishes.
Dragon Ball rules. You can only be brought back once.
Or it could be that awkward.
I guess
it's the awkward X thing where you run into your ex and you're just like, oh, hey, and then he dies.
Well,
you're
it's
off the hook, and then she just vanishes into nothing.
It says not before joyously reuniting with the unicorn. Now, I guess the joy can only have been on his part, perhaps. I don't know.
But he got to see her walk away one last time and just went, and then he died.
No, because she vanished. She didn't walk.
Okay. Without thinking, though, about the official novellas or anything like that.
I can't not think about it. It's too much.
It's simply too good.
I'll try my hardest.
So let's just instead have the cliche ending where it shows everybody in the future, like, you know, Molly Grew and Schmendrick rebuilt the castle on top of the hill by the sea and decided to sit there and watch the narwhals instead of the unicorns, because, you know, true narwhals or true unicorns of the sea. And
right.
So it flashes like the generic, you know what I mean, afterwards, you know. I can't even think of a movie that does it, but they do it all the time.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, Molly and Schmendrick get to rebuild
it's
the castle. Somehow the skeleton's still there. Like, the skeleton's still there, like, clutching, like, the empty bottle of wine.
And the cat.
The cat's got to be in there somewhere.
Yeah.
The cat's in the bottle of wine because that's, you know, that cat sees a bottle. If it fits, it sits. So,
yeah.
The unicorn is still, you know, Amalthea goes back to the woods and she's frolicking around now with her unicorn friends, or is she just going back to the butterfly, thanking the butterfly, by the way, for sending her on that quest, because otherwise life would have been really boring for her. And like, how did she not know that she was the last, by the way, to begin with? If she's standing around, there's no other unicorns around. She's like, where did everybody go?
Each have their own forests, but
But like, why?
That would piss the hunters off pretty good, though, because if there's a unicorn in the forest, they're not going to find any game to kill.
Well, so legit. If they all live in their own forest, then she's just going to go back to nothing.
But, right? but that's my point. How did she? I was circling back to the beginning of how did she not know that she was?
Yeah.
How did she not understand that she was the last to begin with? Why did she have to have a butterfly speak to her in songs and riddles and tell her? By the by, like.
Yeah, like you've never seen a unicorn your entire existence, and at what year do you go, huh? I'm starting to.
That's wonder. Where the story starts. That's where it started with her going. Oh,
wait, does our story end with the hunters going around and going, there's no game here again. I wonder why that is.
Then the hunters starve to death.
It's a loop. It's a loop. It's a cycle.
Time loop. Oh, no.
It just comes back.
I want to see the future where if I had to create a story, not joking about the horse sex anymore, let's take that official story. And they're fighting the griffin, but instead of some random person, you know, dying and Schmidrick bringing him back, all of a sudden, all you hear is...
No, Amalthea brings him back.
Well, no, Schmidrick bringing back Amalthea is what I meant.
Bring Amalthea, yeah. Okay.
So instead of that, they're about to die, the griffin's about to tear him up, you just hear the hooves in the background, they turn around, Lear is riding Amalthea, that's his new steed, and he's just plunging the sword deep in, and he's like, let's go, Amalthea, and she goes, you got it, and she flips back. And they do this tag attack. It's anime.
It plays in the background.
It's anime.
Like he jumps up, he swings her around, she swings him around. It's like a whole thing. It's
he's got a sword, but she has blades on her like hooves.
On her hooves.
She goes into a fighting stance too.
and just when they think that they're going to be defeated, she just disappears, and it turns out Schmidrick just had it was an illusion. He just made an illusion of them. Because he's very good at it. And then he does that thing where like a whole bunch of them appear at once. Anyway.
Yeah. And then
now it's just the Avengers.
And then he's surprised by it.
Yeah, every time he does something, he goes, whoa.
Like, I just did that. Magic.
I have to mention, Lindsay, from the Wikipedia entry for that, The Way Home, under writing, it says, the genesis of the project came about when Beagle decided to write a story set in the world of The Last Unicorn without necessarily including any of the same characters. From there, Beagle says that, quote, things happened. And that's where the writing entry ends. There's no further summation. Just says things happened.
I mean, that sounds like an appropriate answer from an author, in all honesty. Things happened.
At least they keep the theme and like tone, I guess, of the originals. They didn't go batshit crazy and change the characters like, what was it, To Set a Watchman?
Go Set a Watchman, the sequel to Kill a Mockingbird.
Right, where they completely changed the character.
I'd rather not.
Right.
I'd rather not remember it.
Sometimes old authors should leave their stories alone.
Yeah. I remember when that book came out and everyone was so excited about it, and then it was like it had its own table in Barnes & Noble for like 6 months because they could not get rid of copies.
Yeah.
They just had to leave them sitting there like, please do something with these.
Buy this.
Yeah, you get three copies.
So bad.
Of the movie. Or the
so
book.
Bad.
All right, I think that's enough. I think we're good.
Yeah.
Anything else?
Yeah.
Errol, you got anything else?
No.
No, roll credits, and we'll wait to hear what Lear does in his next existence of nothing. I got nothing.
Well, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll get on the co-pilot.
Just don't let him meet Helios.
And I will start making AI fan art for it, and I will send
that
to you. So you can all see what they do.
No!
America does like what Stan Bush did with Transformers. He just makes a new, or America just makes a new theme song for the end credits.
You gotta think broader. We're in a new age now. The songs will be done by Fall Out Boy and J. Cole.
That's well played, well played.
Why J. Cole? That's... Olivia Rodrigo was right there, and you went with J. Cole, of all people.
Oh, all right. Hey,
Olivia Rodrigo as Amalthea.
And Michael Cera as Schmendrick. Actually, I can see Michael Cera as a live-action Schmendrick.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. I don't hate that.
Yeah.
That's not bad.
Yeah. That's pretty accurate. All right. And then
bring Jeff Bridges back, but this time he plays the king because he's old.
Yeah. Yes.
See? Yeah. There
that
you
was
go.
Lindsay's thought, yeah.
And then
that could work.
Who's really hot? The guy from for Schmendrick, the guy from The Bear.
Oh, Jeremy Allen White.
I still have a photo of who they were wanting to cast for Schmendrick in the original. I have no clue who he is. I don't remember his name at all. But
I'm older now.
I still have a photo of him. I'm like, why? Why do you want him to be Schmendrick? Because like, why are you trying to make Schmendrick sexy? Like,
oh, you're assuming he wasn't already sexy. Okay, Cap.
I do have one more thing
who
to
is
add.
That?
This is my last.
I have no idea.
It's my last thing. So Peter S. Beagle, author himself, has basically said that his old manager still has control of a lot of the social media around Last Unicorn. So if you go to the Beagleverse, you literally type in Beagleverse on
Beagleverse.
Yes, you type that in on Google. That's
going
to
take you to the Beagle Boys from DuckTales.
So I'm glad everybody else talked during this because I just realized that my microphone was set to my headset, so I don't know how well people heard me this entire show.
You sounded
fine. The entire show.
Yeah, we
awesome.
Got you.
Well, that's for you, but that's not for OBS. Like Discord's fine. OBS switched for some reason, and I don't know why. And that's frustrating.
That's Jonathan Rhys-Meyers is who that is.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah.
He's been in a bunch of different things. He was in Bennett Like Beckham. He was in August Rush from Paris with Love. That's he's in the Tudors. Sarah loves this guy because she loves the Tudors. So
I hope I picked up okay because I had a lot of good horse humor in this one. I really got the flex.
You had a lot
stuff.
Of subsidiary
of a horse time.
Yeah. Next week, now that you can all hear me again, next week is a very special episode. What are we canceling, Lindsay? What do we cancel?
We are not going to review Elemental.
Thank God.
Because Shannon says it's a stupid movie,
Thank
even though I really enjoyed
Christ
it.
Christ in heaven. Jesus on
Did
a cross.
Did you see it? Did you watch it?
Yeah. I watched the commercials.
No, you didn't, liar.
I watched the ads. That's all I needed. I don't like that style. I don't like the Pixar animations. I don't like the 3D stuff. I prefer hand-drawn. All of those movies feel very samey to me. They just feel very samey.
So then tell us what we're going to watch instead that's hand-drawn.
It's not hand-drawn.
It's stop motion.
Exactly.
I cleared it with Lindsay. I said, does this count? And she said yes. That's the only reason we're doing it. She cleared it.
Stop motion is still a form of animation.
Did you watch the trailer finally?
Yes.
It's wild.
It looks like a 90-minute Tool video.
Ariel, we're watching Mad God next week.
Trying to figure out what you guys were alluding to, so I'm glad you finally said it.
Yeah, Mad God. This is a
it
movie that
apparently
was,
took this guy 30 years.
30 years.
To animate
one
it.
Guy. Yeah. And
Thank
I've,
you.
Yeah.
I've been told this is a very divisive film that it is like thematically incredible and the visuals are amazing
as hell, but
the
I
plot
watch it.
The plot is nonsensical. I don't think there's any dialogue.
So it's Phil Tippett, who's the guy who did all of Jurassic Park. He did a ton of stuff for Star Wars, RoboCop.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's extremely talented at what he does. It's just
Boy, this movie looks
well,
like a
we'll
trip.
We'll see if this is a Cobbler and the Thief
type thing. I've never seen this film. I've always held off on it, but I always wanted to. I think Bob watched it and Bob liked it.
So you said it's on Shudder, correct?
It's on Shudder. I'll send Hunter my credentials. And so that's next week. I'm very curious to see how this goes. I have a feeling this could either be
something new.
I am too, but I feel like depending on how this goes, this could join the Two Thumbs Club. Maybe.
We'll,
I don't know.
We'll find out.
We'll find out next week here on the show.
I have great respect for stop motion animation, though, because it takes a lot of time and a lot of patience to
do
it well.
Agreed. But it is also grotesque, and you do not...
Yeah, that's the part I'm...
You do not deal well with grotesque.
But I also know it's, like, fake, and it's, like, animated grotesque. I can deal with animated grotesque a little better than, like, your practical effects grotesque.
Not all of it's fake. There are parts of...
Okay, so it's not just stop motion, it's also pixelation.
There's also real stuff put into it, so yeah, it'll be an experience.
Yep.
Anyway,
well,
hey, Hunter,
I'm gonna vomit.
Rest of the week, what do we got? Now that they can hear me. Fuck.
So last night we didn't do anything. So you didn't miss
Damn
that.
Right.
You
no,
didn't
I
miss
did Texas.
Yes. That's true.
I'm gonna have to re-listen to our last one by the time we record again, because... I don't remember what we were doing.
It's been two weeks, so we are coming back next week, one way or another, no matter what, with a new episode of PZ85 Plays the Horror at Headstone Hill. Our Deadlands campaign will continue. Kaz is back in California. There's no other interruptions to be had, so that'll continue then. But for the rest of this week, I don't know why you threw it to me, because Lindsay needs to tell us what we're doing tomorrow night on After Dark.
It's him and Steven, because they picked the stupid topic this week because I took over this show for this month and he got pissy about it. So.
Oh, I was drinking that night. I don't remember.
We're doing video game something or other.
You told us that you and Steven decided on top five video games, and then you immediately backpedaled and said mostly Steven.
Let's bring him in here real quick and find out real quick. Hold on. I'm going to bring him
into the show. Steven in. Let's
get him in here real quick.
Steven. Hi, Steven.
Steven, what did we say next? What did we say we were going to do for the show? It was five video game adaptations. What was it?
Not adaptations. Favorite games of all time, right?
Was it favorite games of all time?
So, you can remember. Literally, here is the discussion from the chat. Nope, Steven and I decided top five games of all time. At which point, all of us went, no, we already have a list for tonight. And I asked, do you mean favorite games? Do you mean best games? Because they're not the same thing. And then you never clarified.
All right, Steven, let's clarify right now. Favorite games, how about that?
Okay.
Top five favorite video games. Yeah.
Top five favorite video games. Okay.
That'll be tomorrow. And then on Friday.
That's a big one. But yes.
You gotta bring it all up. And then Friday, of course, it's
unicorn time.
It's unicorn time. We'll bring the drinks. You bring the patience for it. Until then, thank you to Ariel for joining the show tonight. Of course, we had Haley on last time. Lindsay, do you have any more friends that might want to jump in and watch Mad God?
Not that I think I can get a hold of in time to do it, so it'll just be us next week.
What if I get Bob?
Ooh, if you can get him to watch...
If you could get Bob to do the show, that would be awesome.
Get him to get on.
I don't think
so. That would be awesome, though, but I don't think he will.
I'm going to try to get Bob.
I think you should make Steven do it.
Well, I was going to say, I'm going to try to get Bob, but if we can't get Bob, Steven, you're up next week with Mad God.
You hear that, Steven? You're a backup.
You're a backup, Steven.
I've always been a backup.
That's it. We're out of here. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for myself and for Double H, for Lindsay, for Ariel, and for Steven for some reason. Thank you for tuning in this week. We'll see you tomorrow for All New After Dark. And then next week, oh boy, Mad God. I can't wait. Hunter, take us out.
Mm-mm. No, that's a guest turn.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, Ariel, take us out.
Oh gosh, I didn't prepare for this. I should have prepared for this. Beagleverse. Yeah. Go to the Beagleverse if you want reliable stuff.